And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Welcome to Declare Your Independence. Me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona. Now we have, let me do a little slide here, up there. I need to hear my voice more. There's so much going on, and there's so many people that are doing a lot of stuff, and some people pay a bigger price. I mean, you know, for us all to have at least an understanding of the ground rules of the jackboot on your face forever. Okay, I mean, you know, you need to know where the line is, you know, so you know where you can be inspirational. Sometimes it's as simple as not standing up, not sitting down, you know, not moving back, not, you know, it's always saying no to the man in some way. Well, Damo is a no-sayer kind of, and puts himself on the front lines along with Pete Iyer. Pete Iyer, we have on the line with us yesterday. A Damo was sentenced to go to jail. Okay, he knew he was up for at least something. We're going to do something, and we don't know how long. But that's what Pete Iyer from CopBlock.org, Liberty on Tour. He's going to help us out. I didn't ask anything. I wanted to learn with you guys on the air. I got you there, Pete.
Yep, loud and clear, Ernie.
Okay. So tell us this, walk us through it, and give us a narrative. What happened yesterday?
Yeah, as you pointed out in a demo, he's in a cage right now. He's being held in Manchester, New Hampshire's Valley Street Jail. It's probably the worst jail in New Hampshire for like a city jail, a county jail. But he's going to be there. He's there for a resisting guilty charge. They supposedly is guilty of resisting for going limp while he was being arrested last July in Manchester, New Hampshire at our pro-police accountability rally outside the police department. And he's sentenced to the max, 12 months in jail, but the 10 months of that suspended. So he's supposed to sit for 2 months. And with good time, he'll be out in 40 days. But while he's in jail, he also has a trial coming up in August. For another incident that happened in Manchester. And essentially it's just all these things are just very indicative of the force that's threatened and that's used against some people that have the audacity, I think, to stand up for the truth and speak out against injustices they see. Because in both situations, in the chalking incident that happened last year outside the police department, Adamo was trying to bring attention to the actions of some Manchester PD employees who had beat up a guy and not been held accountable. And then for the upcoming trial he has in August, that was a situation that happened at Manchester's West High School when the school liaison officer, a Manchester PD employee, slammed the kid's head off a table. And Adamo merely followed up on that, made some calls to the police department and the school. And for that, he's being charged with 3 counts of wiretapping. So, again, the demo was just out there trying to help other people get accountability, and he himself has been targeted.
So there has been an effort to make sure that he gets some financial support while he's in there and have a little something when he comes out and gets paid to sit in jail for us. And I'm just it's copblock.org/pledge, right?
That's correct.
Okay, so let's go ahead and keep promoting that. And I my thing is that I think it's it would be an injustice with an injustice by us being unjust, and if we didn't donate and have him have some, you know, I'm sitting there and I know that I'm making some money as I'm sitting there, and I'm going to come out with making more than a jailer standing there looking at me. You know, it's just in your face, and I really want to support that, and I know he's making a portion of that to go towards cop block effort too, and your activism. But I'm just I really want to emphasize. Have people been donating? Has it started off?
Yeah, they have. It's been good. Adamo made the pledge live on Monday. He was pretty sure he was going to be taken when he had court yesterday, and he was. And the pledge essentially, you know, he says, hey, vote if you think this is unjust, the situation is unjust, vote with your wallet, send a message to my captors and help me out and help Cop Lock out, as you mentioned. So, you know, he set up different donation levels, whether it's 5 cents a day, which is $3 total, or $1 a day, which is $60 total for his stay in there, and already over $900 has been raised. So he set that up. Right now, 25% of that is going to go to him, to his commissary, and to give him a little bit of money to jumpstart his activism again when he gets out, and the rest he's going to have allocated to go to coplock.org to advance the mission of police accountability. So, you know, we met a lot of folks on the road through Coplock, through Liberty on Tour, Motorhome Diaries, and a lot of people, you know, told us, you know, maybe a working folks who said, yeah, I have a family. I really appreciate what you guys do. I do it myself, but I didn't have this house or if I didn't have this job or stuff like that. So this is definitely a way for people, if they do appreciate what he's up to and the, you know, the work he's done, it's to support him and, you know, let him know that it's appreciated. So,
well,
I know I appreciate him.
Yeah, as do we all. Donna's putting that up. We have something at top right now. New Hampshire man serving 60 days for riding with Chuck. Angel Clark. Now, tell us who Angel Clark is.
Andrew Clark. I don't even know who Andrew Clark
Angel.
Is. Angel. Angel Clark.
Ah, well, you got a fan.
I don't know. Is it from New York? Is that Angel from New York?
I don't know, but she's posted on Freedom's Phoenix, man. She's all over it. So thank you, Angel.
Well, I appreciate it, Angel.
Oh, she's on LRN in the afternoon. What she's I can't remember the show. I just met her. You know, she's going to start writing more on here. I just met her at Porkfest. I knew I recognized that name from somewhere. You know, there's a lot of, it's a good example of a lot of good people that are just, it's starting to get to where it used to be. I tell you, when I was younger, your age, you could count on your hands how many people you knew across the country that, you know, understood what was going on and doing this stuff. Now it's like you can't keep track of them. So it's, and people rise up to be noticed like you in a demo. And I'm telling you, I've just been watching a series of about, it's like 60 little videos. It's like 3 to 10 minutes each. And it's like the greatest story never told. And it's just a guy that, you know, was, you know, he has, you know, some money. You know, he's a millionaire, you know, the young from a car dealership family. And he just came to realize what was going on, warned his family before the 08 crash, you know, get out and doing this, and I see where this is going, and buy silver and everything physical and blah, 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 blah. And he came to a realization, went through all these cycles, and he started doing these videos and became very popular, millions. And I'm going, you know, in there, he described you guys. You know, it was, I'm watching it, and I can see, and he uses a lot of our rhetoric and so on, to the point, I think he listens to the show. But, you know, I'm going, okay, so we're having him on week after next, and I was just can see of all the activism out there and how what is the most effective, it's, you know, it's gotten to the point that we're going through stages to where it's, I don't think we have to emphasize how bad they are as much now as much as we want our friends to survive it. And I don't want a demo to come out and put himself right back in where he's going to, because they're making it clear, you know, what you can and can't do. You cannot say no. You cannot challenge it. You cannot hold them accountable. You can't. These are things we need to know. Thank you, Adamo. And we're going to
talk. People that say no. Yep.
We'll be right back.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Oh, yeah.
Or bad public officials saying I'm their subject. You know, picture, you want to know the future? You know, this was H.G. Wells, they did Orwell, they did Heinlein, they did George Lucas, they did Jules Verne, and while I was gone, it was called The Prophets of Science Fiction or something like that. And it was a series that they have up on the Science Channel, and I saved it. And when I got back, I started watching them, and I just, one more, because I got DVR, kind of whiz through commercials. They go by faster. Well, what happens is that they, talking about George Orwell and how these guys predicted the future, and really the first one in 1860s, I think it was, before the American Civil War, 1840, it was in the mid-1800s, you have Jules Verne talking about going to the moon and how he would do that, and the 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea and submarines and everything, and the science of this. And it was amazing how much you sparked what's going on in the future. And in the later years of Jules Verne, he got, he was always kind of dark. And his publisher kind of, no, happy endings, keep it light. It's kind of, this is how you become popular and you'll be rich and you can buy your own yacht, which he did, go out sailing, so on, things good. That guy dies, kind of took away his throttle, his governor on his throttle. So, man, he's full down plow, and you can see what was happening. He's sparking the imagination of a lot of people, including the bad guys, and they're taking these inventions and waging war with them. And the more that he thought about it, and the more he went into the future, and there's one, it wasn't until the late 90s that his he threw away and burned all of his, a lot of his novels and books. So you could see that all the stuff that he had was manifesting itself as bad in the future. And there was one, it was called Paris in the 21st Century. And it was, or 20th Century, something like that. It was Future Paris. And he described a future of how it was just dystopian kind of thing. Orwell did the same thing. And all these guys, anybody that thinks into the future, like L. Neil Smith, a lot of these libertarian novelists, Heinlein and so on. But there's, as we got further and further along, they started to realize, in addition to all this Big Brother picture of the future of a boot on the face of, the future forever, the people more recently, they're more optimistic, but it's because they went after that. There's still a after that. And part of the after that is you got to go through that. And going through it right now is Adamo Freeman sitting in a cage, showing us where, the boot is and how hard it's pressing and what it's going to cost you, what it's going to do. And it can get worse. At least he's not shot, They do it on video. They got it, taped. They got evidence, but they don't care. So who's judging this? Bad guys. Now, the wiretapping thing, we've gone through this before with Pete Nademo in Massachusetts, and there was a case where they actually went to trial. No attorneys, they do it themselves in front of a jury, and give us the case of that, Pete. Let's walk that through a little bit so people understand the kind of work that you're doing and the risks you're taking. Explain what happened in Massachusetts, will you please?
Yeah, this incident happened back in summer of 2010. And again, it was another situation where Adamo and myself were trying to help somebody else out. We had a few friends who were arrested in Massachusetts. They were held at the county jail, and we drove down from New Hampshire to bail them out. And when we were down there, we filmed everything. So we attempted to film the process in the jail lobby, and we were told we could film. They had cameras on us, and then eventually they changed their mind and said they couldn't film. And, we asked questions about that, asked for them to point to relevant documents and things like that, which they were unable to do. They ended up arresting us, charging us with 8 things total, including felony wiretapping, as you mentioned. And a year later, we had a jury trial, and we were found not guilty by the jury. One of the guys afterwards came out, and one of the jurors came out afterwards, and he said, you know, I knew on the stand that this guy was lying. One of the arresting individual, Todd M. Dodge, at Greensville PD, and he said he just held fast, and he convinced the other jurors that, look, what these guys did wasn't wrong, and so because of that, because someone on the jury had a conscience and voted with their mind, we were all right, and we were, steadfast, and as we went through the whole process, we're fortunate to have a lot of support by a lot of people, a lot of eyes on the content we put out. All the information from that incident is on CopLock at coplock.org/Greenfield. And we have a 4-minute overview vid, a longer overview vid, and the trial videos. But because of that, I think, Damo's pretty confident that he wants to do the same thing. He's charged with felonies for wiretapping, and he was just trying to hold some people accountable, some public officials who have no right to no expectation of privacy in the court of their duties. And that was a ruling that came down about a week after our not guilty verdict last summer in Greenfield. From Simon Glick, who was a lawyer in Boston, and he witnessed some Boston PD employees assault a man and videotaped it. And when they went after him and charged him with felony wiretapping, he fought it, and it went up to the First Circuit Court of Appeals. So it was a federal case, and Simon Glick won, and this court case set precedent. So that this is essentially what a demo is. Trusting that the court in Manchester in August, when he has a jury trial for his wiretapping, will have to look at the Glick decision and realize that he did nothing wrong. Everybody he called, everybody he talked to try to hold accountable for the actions of Darren Murphy, the West Manchester High School employee, the Manchester PD employee who worked at West High School, who assaulted a student there. Everybody involved was a public official who had no expectation of privacy. So that's essentially what a dame was going to go in and argue in a few weeks here. And, I'm pretty confident he'll be all right. I know he didn't do anything wrong. And, it's a clear case of him being threatened for just trying to make known the actions of the real aggressors.
Okay, now this is one thing that I want to make sure we walk this through, because what happened was, I remember this hitting the net, and I could see why they want, shut the boys up, because what happened is, as I remember it, there was some, they're in the cafeteria or something at the high school, people got their self cameras and videos, and that's what's really changed. The technology now is you can't do anything around anybody without some video of it. And you try explaining it to them, and it doesn't change their inclination, their default position to just want to put their jackboot on your face. But it does make them to where they're like, whoa, we might get caught. They're looking over their shoulder kind of deal. But they want protect. You'll make the issue not them beating up on some kid. It was you doing videotapes about it. And I remember this happened. We'll talk about the actual incident itself, and if we'll find out if New Hampshire is in the first district. That might help. And then they'll go, yeah, we don't care. Do it on appeal.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
No freebies. No freebie beating up people. You don't get any freebies when Cop Block is around. You always think, he was young. Yeah, he was a minority. Yeah, it was late at night. Yeah, so we just get a freebie. We just can pound on somebody. Yeah, some young kid in, being a little snot-nosed, little whatever, in the public school system, and I'm a campus cop, and I can. Because I can. And when you do stuff like this, and what's the repercussion? What's the accountability? A report, a complaint filed that they don't even say, we don't have that form. I mean, I've been through this. I know how it works. Shelton going through his
trial process, and you got the judge wanting to be the judge, the prosecutor, and the jury. He couldn't get the city prosecutor to make the argument that the judge wanted, even though it was totally, man, it was like, it was lose your bar card and on appeal kind of stuff. You know, that judge didn't care. He goes like this. I am willing to entertain the argument that the mere dispatch of an officer gives him the ability to beat the crap out of anybody on the scene for not giving him ID kind of thing. I mean, seriously, that was his argument. And the prosecutor's like going, that's not what the law. And he actually goes up to the judge and shows the judge the law. And the judge didn't care. And before the trial, the prosecutor was trying to dismiss, get out of this case, but there was some political power up top. They wanted 4409. They wanted him. They charged him with, you know, a guy didn't pick up a car that he bought from him. He's had sitting out there for months. A guy's in Canada or whatever. Come to find out, the Scottsdale police told him, he called, he says, hey, man, well, I wanted to get the car or something, you know, make sure it was there. Shelton had it there. The Scottsdale police told him not to contact him and not to get the car because they were just holding it for months. They knew where it was sitting right there. Held it for months because he was doing camera fraud, because he was hammering on. They wanted to get him with felony, grand theft, whatever. And it was just all, and the guy without his car, they made him fly to testify. What did Shelton do? He gets the phone records. Look, I've been calling this guy. He never returns my calls. Why? Because the Scottsdale police told him not to. That's how bad it is. Here, call this number. That detective, call this number. It's in the ad on the thing. Call the number. Calls it. Boom. His phone rings. Wow, amazing. Jury, not guilty. He goes right down and he files a civil suit, and he got a settlement for $20,000+. You know, it's just, and then when the city council votes, because it's over 20,000, they have to vote to do it. He went in as a Scottsdale resident complaining that they did it. He's going, hey, why are you doing this to assessing the taxpayers? You should be cutting it out of the budget of the Scottsdale Police Department for being scumbags. I mean, major scumbags. We go to different protests, and they'll have people over here, you know, the officers going, leave that one alone. They don't touch that because they know what? He'll sue. They know he'll make money. They know he'll prove the point that they're, you know, targeting, being buttheads, violating his rights all the time. They know they got Mark Victor and us behind them. We're like, bring it on. Bring it on, bring it on, bring it on like Donkey Kong, man. We're going to have us some fun chucking barrels, okay? Well, now it's got to the point to where, you know, there is a detente, a kind of a respect, you know, okay, you get to complain. Okay, you get the tape. Okay, you get the whatever, but they catch you alone out in the whatever. You know, they're not going to be there to defend your, you know, serve and protect. I'm guaranteeing to you that. Manchester, you know, they're like, hey, man, you know, we got our little thing going on here, and you're not allowed to muck it up. You have a young man that's in, you know, I don't know, he's been a little butthead. I don't even remember what the heck it was. He's probably being disrespectful or something. You know, he's a teenager, you know, 13, 14-year-old. Teenager at high school, and something, I don't know what it was that ticked the officer off, but I remember him grabbing and picking up and doing kind of pounding something. He was, you know, beating up on a kid. Okay, this was not a big football player kind of whatever, it was a kid. Well, it got on tape. All right, man, so it goes planetary. Looky here, a demo cop block. I remember he's like, all right, well, let's go ahead and follow this through. Having had this experience in Massachusetts before, and the Glick decision where they made the decision, hey, man, if you're a public official, don't count on you're going to get any kind of privacy. I mean, you're a public official. Get over it. So here we go. He's like, all right. And I think I remember him saying that he was recording, you know, not that it matters, but I think I remember in some of the conversations that, yep, no, we're recording this. And he took those recordings and he put them up on the internet as he walked this process through. Oh, hell no. We got to nip it. Nip it in the bud, and they saw a demo and Pete and cop block, and you know, that's where we're going to nip it. So, felony wiretapping. Now, this has been going on around the country. Different states have different, you know, reasons for what they do. Now, one thing is like in Arizona, if one person consents or one person knows that they're recording, you can record it. Hey, it's my conversation. You know, you don't want to be recorded. Don't talk to me. So that can, and we can make use of that during the show here. I call anything. I can record. Hell, I can do it live. You know, but I never do. I think one time I did, and it was because, you know, dealing with the Phoenix police and Occupy and doing things that we were, you know, what we knew they were going to, whatever. So we wanted tape of that, but we never aired it. Okay. So this is because I want them to be honest with me. I said, you know, I tell you what they said, because I said they said it. You know, Ernie, you fibber. Okay. Who you going to believe, me or them? Guess who has better credibility? So the thing is, that's why you always tell the truth. Cop Block, Pete, and Damo have always told the truth. So who do you believe? Well, now it gets to the point to where they're, you know, they got him in on this other Cop Block chalking kind of, you can't, yeah, I can, no, you can't, whatever, you're under arrest, you go limp, and they say you're resisting arrest, multiple counts of resisting arrest, because you didn't get up and, you know, march to our drum. And go, I didn't resist. I just didn't help. Oh, well, that's resistant. You know, and that's a distinction, a definition right there. That's kind of, so then they play games. Okay, they do the court case. They do the, you know, the when you're going to have your jury trial. And all of a sudden, at the end, the last minute, what do? They send a piece of mail that's crucial to when he goes to do the jury, whatever, and they put a different address on it. Now, inside the document has a correct address. On the envelope, incorrect address. Doesn't matter. You didn't answer, man. Hooskow! And you don't get your trial. Oh, you know why? Because they can. Okay? Because they can. All right. So now he's sitting in jail serving his time. You know, they don't have time, money to be paying for all these lawyers and all this kind of stuff. They haven't taken the time to become lawyers. They're activists. So what do we learn from this? We learn the injustice of the system. We learn what the lengths that they'll go to protect them. And they'll make the issue not the bad that they did, but that you are calling them out on it, that you are recording it, that you are the one sharing it with the people. That is the crime. Not, it's just evidence of the crime that they did. No. Because they can. You go to Massachusetts, they had a trial on this before. Now, in that decision, let's talk about that a little bit. I want to get into the wiretapping in New Hampshire. But when you were in Massachusetts, you went down there, they got you for wiretapping. Tell us about, I remember we were following that also as you went to trial on that one. When you went in, what was the demeanor of the prosecutor, the judge, and the jury as you went through that process arguing on your own behalf?
Well, we went through over a year-long process from the time we were arrested and until the time that we actually had jury trial. And so when we first went in for some of the proceeding sort of court legal land thing, you know, there were the bailiffs and the judge. The judge was always pretty neutral. And in fact, I thought he gave us some, not gave us latitude, but he realized that we were pro se and, you know, worked with us a little bit. But some of the bailiffs initially, you know, right, one of the first times we were in there were, you know, yelling at us when we didn't stand up when the judge walked in and things like that. And so fast forward from that moment to a year later when we had jury trial and the same bailiffs, you know, we'd be out on the street at a local diner in Greenfield, and we're on the ground there doing outreach and activism, and they were wishing us good luck. And so it was, and one of the bailiffs, you know, who worked at the door of the courthouse, who at one point, you know, would be very stern with us, later, at the conclusion of our trial, she was giving me her email address to tell me how she was doing.
Oh, changing minds. We'll be right back.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free.
What do I want to break free from?
I want to break free from your lies.
Oh, you fibbers. Fibbers, 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 fibbers. You know, the one thing, they always, when you do jury selection and so on, one of the questions a lot of times they ask is, do you, you know, trust a policeman to give accurate testimony? No, next. I mean, if it gets to the point to where the public doesn't believe a freaking word they're saying, you know, or it doesn't have a they got a badge, so obviously what they say must be what happened, and especially it contradicts the videotape. I mean, there's so much video. You know, it's not even tape. I mean, you know, you got the digital recording devices that are, you know, $10 and, you know, whatever. And you, this is what happened. This is what happened. They don't care. Well, we stipulate that that happened, but you videotaping that that happened is, that's what the crime is. You go in jail anyway. I mean, it's just social and economic engineering to Orwellian future, and it's bad. And somebody's got to be out there that has the demeanor of peace and love and showing what's happening without getting confrontational other than just to confront lies, the state, and advocate for truth and the individual. Just that right there, standing in front of the tanks. Oh, which Pete Iyer has tattooed on his forearm. You know, the three tanks TM and square guy? I love that tattoo. It's beautiful. And I'm just going, wow, this is, man, you know, if that doesn't, you know, keep your mind right. So I want to go ahead and finish, you know, this segment with a few things. But one thing real quick, I want to understand the demeanor you were ending on before the end of the segment about the bailiffs and jurors and people in your trial. What kind of town? It wasn't Boston. I mean, was it some little small town? Where was this at?
Yeah, we were in Greenfield, which is in northwest Massachusetts.
So it's like, what, a little, like, smaller than Manchester, or?
Yeah, it's about 25,000. It's it's a nice area, actually. Like, we jokingly refer to it as part of the Shire, you know, despite the arbitrary political boundary that says it's Massachusetts or Taxachusetts. It's, you know, the folks there are good people, you know, for the most part, and we saw that, you know, we went down there from the time we were arrested to a year later when we had trial. A lot of the people that we interacted with, the state employees, the bailiff, and things like that, you know, we're wishing us good luck by the end, and you know, they've given us contact information and checking out our site and stuff like that. So
very cool.
We know we had an impact, and just like Kate Ager, who's a Daniel's girlfriend, she accompanied him yesterday when he went to Manchester's court when they took him and brought him to jail, and she did a write up on Cop Block about the whole incident yesterday, and she said that one of the bailiffs present named Tony was very sympathetic, and she said, you know, Dan was talking to him beforehand, and when the judge there, you know, Adamo said, hey, you guys had a paperwork error. You guys messed up. Check it out. The judge is like, well, that's not what I'm looking into right now. My job right now is to sentence you. And Kate said that this bailiff, Tony, you know, he looked really, you know, his head was hung low, and he looked depressed about what he was involved with. So I'm sure Adamo definitely, you know, helped change his mind a little bit, and I'm sure he's thinking about his actions today. So it does make a difference.
It's yes, it does.
Right away.
And one thing that we were enthusiastic about helping you with was creating a DVD that had a lot of your actions and kind of the information you wanted to relay to people and how they should react and film and all that. And that had something to do with the Manchester High School thing. You know, tell us about that.
Right. So just to get everyone on the same page, in early 2010, four off-duty Manch cops beat up a guy, never held accountable. The state attorney general said it wasn't the best day in Manch's history, but we're not going to do anything about it, essentially. So me and Ademo, we joined a few dozen others, did a pro-police accountability rally in Manchester where eight of us were arrested, including Ademo. That's where he got his resisting charge, for which he's jailed for right now. We went and spent a couple months in Manchester last fall to get the word out about that, and that's when we got the DVD you mentioned. We got, I think, 5,000 of them printed up from you, which was excellent. We had a few Manchester videos we made on there, a number of other videos. We distributed them all around the city, encouraged people to share their stories about, you know, their own police interactions. And a couple of the folks who ended up getting copies of the DVD were some of these Manchester PD students that were a week later after receiving the DVD and having an exchange with the demo they found themselves in the cafeteria at school and where that incident unfolded that you mentioned. And one of the guy who filmed, he said, you know, he said based on the conversation he had with the demo, based on getting the DVD, based on thinking about, you know, the double standards that he'd witnessed already, that he realized the importance of filming when he saw a police employee interact with somebody, and this somebody happened to be his friend, and his friend, you know, used some language that Darren Murphy, the police employee, didn't like, and Darren Murphy, for whatever reason, decided to use force because of that, and he grabbed the student by his hair and slammed his head off the table. And the students that evening came and found us. We were in Manchester again doing outreach, and they said, hey, we went to a local media outlet and ran this video by them, and they said they're interested to come back tomorrow, but, you know, who knows? So we said, hey, we'll run with it. So Adamo did an interview, made some calls, and put that video up, and that's why he's in, that's what he has this felony, three counts of felony wiretapping for now. So again, he's just trying to seek accountability, but all this thing, all these things are related. You know, Darren Murphy, the Manchester PD school liaison officer, he was back on the job the next day, no questions asked, and all his colleagues were running interference for him, and the students involved in the incident were later suspended and expelled, and copblock.org, the website was blocked on school computers. Kids were told they couldn't wear copblock.org T-shirts or distribute literature, and so it's total censorship by these public officials who purport to have the best interest of the next generation in mind, when in fact, you know, Adamo is there and other folks supporting him, trying to get the word out and trying to get, make the situation transparent and actually trying to help the next generation.
So wait a minute, they expelled the kid that did the videotaping too?
Yeah, well, yeah, he's gone, and they seem to have targeted him later as well. You know, like they try to make an example out of Adamo. The Manchester PD seem to want to make an example out of this dude as well. Later on, months after the incident at West High School, that individual was involved in, you know, a little scuffle. I don't know the full extent, but from what I understand, it was just a little sort of teenage scuffle over a girl or something. But he's 18 years old, and the other kid involved with it was 17, and they charged him with multiple felonies. So he definitely was gone after because of his proactive nature, you know, trying to hold Darren Murphy accountable.
They gotta nip it.
His friend.
Nip it. We gotta get these guys nipped. Okay. So yeah. I can see. Wow. This is. It's going to be interesting, you know, to see how that comes out. But have you learned something? I mean, at what point do you go, okay, we document it, we did it, now we need to... I mean, there's going to come a time where everybody's going to know that the jackboot is pressing on their face. I mean, do you kind of go, you know, look, man, we warned you, and now we go take care of ourselves?
Well, I mean, I'm starting to do that. I definitely don't want to live reactionary. You know, I don't want to be out there and... I have to, you know, live for myself and take care of my own needs first. But like you said, I think the collective, for lack of a better word, consciousness is changing, and more people, you know, will film when they see a police interaction today. You know, we get dozens of videos. I just love it now when I see a video and I hear, you know, just some random person, hey, gotta film this, and there's multiple people filming, and that's exactly what helps, you know, make Antonio Buehler's situation in Austin transparent. He was trying to film a situation where a female was being assaulted by some Austin police officers, and they came at him and arrested him, and fortunately someone else, unbeknownst to him, was filming the interaction. And so these are the kind of things where the redundancies of people looking out for each other really make for safer communities and really hold the real aggressors accountable.
You know, so your stuff in 4409 and our dealings with the Phoenix Police Department. A lot of people wonder how it is that I get away with all this stuff. And as a matter of fact, you met him. His name's Al. When you guys came at one time with Marv, I made sure that he came by and met you down at the courthouse where one of the guys was going to court on some stuff. I go, look, you know, don't. You guys just leave them alone, and you'll be fine. Just protect their rights, and you're fine. But if you don't, I got some videos I want you to see. So we showed him that. I said, look, you do something stupid for 5 minutes, make you infamous. You know, so a lot of the work that you've done already has created an atmosphere of understanding, certainly here and I'm sure around the country, to where, look, you guys go being stupid, the whole world's going to know it, how stupid you want to be. Well, as stupid as they think they can get away with, and people that are paying their salaries tell them to be. So we're just, it's time for the next wave. You know, things are going down really fast. And like I keep saying, we just need to keep breathing in and out and get our greatest revenge living well. And we got a lot of friends to do it with, like Pete and Adamo.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
No fear. No fear, no fear, no fear, because we got the Marine. The Marine is going up against the politician. Well, he's a politician Marine.
The guy. Marine against the machine, right?
Oh, that's good. That's good. The Marine against the machine. Okay. This is, you know, I tell you what's happened. We had an opportunity to, you know, this has always been an opportunity. You know, Mark's always made fun of me doing this, going around doinking the bear, you know, out in the election stuff and having fun. And he thinks about doing it and then not doing it. And he's going to do it. And I go, I got to fill out what paperwork? Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, you run for state or county office here, man, you got, you know, they got an anal probe for you. And they're going to get through every bank account and every stock because the financial disclosure form right there, they're doing everything they can just keep, you know, their boys away and or keep their guys in and keep you away. So what happens, but on a federal case, I mean, a federal campaign, you have FEC reports that are you don't have to fill out anything if you don't spend over $5,000. And if you do, it's a lot easier than the state. And they don't have all this disclosure stuff. Now they'll whine about it for president, and are you going to release, and are you not, and whatever, and who cares. But the point is that when he does this, it's one single piece of paper. Yep, I'm running. Now what? Let's go play. Well, I was able to convince Mark that, you know, we could have some fun. So he's already starting to have some fun. Hadn't even started yet, and he's having some fun. You know, so let's go ahead and talk about, you know, what was the switch that flipped in your head that you go, okay, I'll do this for U.S. freaking Senate, you know, which is going to be, it's Mark Victor versus Republican Congressman Jeff Flake for the U.S. Senate. That's what's going to come down to. And I'm just wondering what was going through your head for you to say yes.
Well, you know, Ernie, I mean, you and I have known each other, what, 25 years or something like that?
Since 93, 94.
Yeah, whatever that adds up to, a long time. And I'm first and foremost an activist, right? I mean, everybody who comes to my law firm applies for a job. I say, yeah, you know, we're a law firm, and I'm a lawyer, and we like to make money here and all this stuff. But I tell everybody flat out, activism is more important to me than making money. That's just in my blood. That's just how we are. That's why you and I are pals, and we've been pals for so long. So, you know, you called me up. And I don't have a lot of extra time. I've got a pretty heavy caseload. I'm in court almost every day, and my work, you know, my alarm goes off at 4:10 in the morning, and lots of times I don't get home till 8 or 9 o'clock at night. I don't have a lot of time. But, you know, you called me and basically said, here's a really good opportunity for some activism, and you really don't have to do very much. I mean, you know, in terms of the state disclosure stuff, the thing that bothers me most about that is the transaction cost is high. I don't want to sit down and figure out all these forms and go through on check boxes and this and that and then have somebody pick through and say, hey, you forgot about this or why did you include that or this or that. You know, it's aggravation. So you presented an opportunity that allowed me to be an activist for a fairly low transaction cost. And, you know, I like to debate people. I like to get up on a stage and promote freedom in front of people. That's what I do. I give speeches all the time. I talk at the Crossroads Gun Show. I usually get couple hundred people there. We're not talking directly about freedom, but you know, when you're talking about the right to keep and bear arms and to pull out a firearm, yeah, you're talking about freedom related issues. And you know, I always weave in other notions of freedom along the way. So it just presented an opportunity for me to talk about things that I like to talk about. And you know, I'm no politician. I don't care about voter blocks. I'm not interested in, you know, I'm not going to shade any kind of issue to get more people to vote for me. I don't really, you know, I'm there to promote freedom. If it works out, great. If it doesn't work out, that's what it is. And I've said, and I had a first interview already with the New Times, and I said, look, I'm not kissing any babies, and I'm not kissing any butts. I'm here to promote freedom, and that's what it is. And he says, He says, how is this going to be received by the people of Arizona, you know, who are very, very conservative generally? I said, I don't care. I'm out to promote freedom. If they like what I have to say, fantastic. If they don't like what I have to say, then, you know, I'll do my best to try to change their minds.
This is going to be, I tell you what was going on. Behind the scenes, they were very concerned in the Republican Party. Okay, I laid a ground. You and I haven't even really talked about this. And I laid a groundwork for you. Jeff Flake, congressman, he was director of the Goldwater Institute in the early 90s when I first met him and so on. And I, you know, regardless of personal, you know, opinions about whatever, he's one of them. I mean, Patriot Act voting, you know, military sweep you off the street supporting, warmongering, funding, you know, neocon Republican. They'll sit there. And the reason I was so adamant about this, because it was, you know, top of the ticket next to the presidential race with Gary Johnson representing the Libertarian, where you got a Republican, Ron Paul, more Libertarian than the Libertarian nominee. I mean, I like Gary's, you know, we would have been ecstatic 20 years ago to have someone of that caliber. But the standard has been set. And there was Arizona always has had, you know, a much higher standard, and say, oh, no hardcore, no compromise. We're not thinking we're going to win. You know, it's representing a definition of a word. And Jeff Flake was brought in. He was going to wear that Libertarian thing. They already had it planned. Republican Liberty Caucus. They're all ready to, you know, anoint him as the Libertarian in the race. No, he's not. Patriot Act. Yeah, but he's Patriot Act. But he leans a little Patriot Act. I mean, you know, I'm just, hell no. So I'm going, you know, this, I can see what's going to happen. It's going to define and keep the word Libertarian, you know, defined here in Arizona one more election cycle. And that has enormous value. And oh my goodness, what did, in the press, I mean, just a big, right, all over the news, just here recently, is Mark Victor just had a drug case where 83 pounds of marijuana found in the van, jury says not guilty. And I'm going, gee, you think they might bring up the drug war? What do you think?
I hope so. I mean, I'm going to bring up the drug war if I get into a debate. I mean, you can't pretend to be for freedom. Either you are or you're not. And so I personally, I don't know what I've never talked to Jeff Flake. I don't really know anything about his views. I hope he's for freedom. I don't know.
And we're going to find out.
If we get a chance to talk, then I'll ask him some questions. Maybe I'll be surprised, and maybe we'll agree on lots of things. I hope we do. I hope he's a good American who's out there trying to promote freedom. But, you know, Ernie, I wrote a paper about this, and I titled it, Are You Really for Freedom? And because I titled it like that because, you know, everybody says they're for freedom. I mean, I don't even know who the Democrat is. I don't know who the guy is or who's going to get the Democrat nomination. Maybe it'll be a woman. I don't know. But I'm sure whoever it is, if you ask them, are you for freedom? They'll say, of course. I'm a huge supporter of freedom. I'm all about freedom, right? Everybody's for freedom. I mean, you could go to any crowd you want and stand in front of them and raise your hand if you're for freedom, and everybody's going to raise their hand. So it's easy to say you're for freedom, right? There's no transaction cost associated with that. But to be for freedom is a completely different thing. And that's why I wrote this article, because, you know, it occurs to me that, you know, people don't have any problem at all supporting the notion of freedom when other people are using their freedoms in ways that you use your freedoms, right? I mean, you know, if you're for legalization of marijuana, for example, you know, if you smoke marijuana, you're for legalization of marijuana. Okay, great. If you're gay, you're for gay rights. Big deal. I mean, that doesn't impress me so much. I'm interested in, what if you don't smoke marijuana? Can you then support the rights of other people to smoke marijuana? What if you're not gay? Can you then support the rights of other people to be gay? I mean, if you don't ride a motorcycle, can you support the rights of motorcycle riders to not wear helmets if they so choose? I mean, those are the harder questions. To me, that's where the rubber hits the road.
Well, when we come back, we're going to, you know, talk. Maybe there'll be some strategy. I'll tell you what my strategy is. I don't have nothing to do with the campaign. I can do whatever the hell I want. And I want to do a lot. You know, and, oh, yeah, I get to do whatever I want with Mark Victor up there taking point, and he can't tell me what to do. And we already have a precedent for this. It was called the Ron Paul Revolution. Well,
this is Charles Goyette, author of the New York Times bestseller, The Dollar Meltdown, so you can learn how to protect yourself and your family. Now, you can audit the Fed. You can end the Fed. But why not start by ignoring the Fed? visit DontTreadOnMeme.com. That's Don't Tread on M-E-M-E, Fashioning the Silver Economy. A meme, a contagious idea that spreads within a culture, a spontaneous order. Nowhere is this more evident than in one's free choice in that most marketable of commodities, money. Let us Austrians use wallet voting. Don't Tread on Meme, the leading craftsman of silver dime trading cards, as well as some offbeat liberty-themed apparel. Follow the history of the dime card outreach at onceuponadime.info and get a silver calculator app at whatisthiscoinworth.info. Boycott an empire of theft. Build a society of consent. Don't Tread on Meme. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
You are not going to believe this, Mark. I have just found out who the Democrat is. Okay.
Oh, who's the Democrat?
Oh, so good. Okay, it's a guy. He's a doctor, Dr. Cremona, but he was a surgeon in the military. Okay. So here you have. Now, what was he? Now, let me give you some of his bio here. He was cop of the year. Let me see. What do they call it here? Rich Cremona received the National Top Cop Award and was named a National SWAT Officer of the Year. In 2002, Cremona was nominated by the President of the United States and unanimously confirmed by the United States Senate to become the 17th Surgeon General of the United States. Okay?
Wow.
So here we have a Surgeon General that was top cop. That was National SWAT Officer. I don't know. You think you guys might have something to talk about?
Oh, you know, if this thing shifts to the drug war, I mean, I don't know. I mean, if there's one thing I really, really like to talk about, it's the drug war. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I got about 19 years talking to drug dealers in attorney-client privilege type meetings and 19 years working in the justice system, dealing with the inner workings of in both the state level and the federal level. I mean, I'm in federal court all the time. I mean, we could talk about the federal sentencing guidelines. We could talk about the drug dealers and the cartels. We could talk about people with 83 pounds who have marijuana hidden in vans who are driving through the state of Arizona. They're blind mules. I mean, man, there's a lot to talk about on that.
Oh, and what's another thing here? Born starts off, Rich's story. Born to a poor Hispanic family in New York City, Dr. Richard Cremona experienced homelessness, hunger, and bleak prospects for a future education, economic opportunity, blah, blah, blah. Child of parents who immigrated to the United States and struggled with alcoholism and substance abuse. And I mean, we got drug war, we got immigration, we got minority, we got, I mean, you know, if this doesn't, he was so counting on you not being there. Oh, and you're a Marine that was in Desert Shield, Desert Storm, you know, the first Gulf War and all this. I mean, this is, you just took all the wind out of his sails. It certainly diverted the debate to another direction. Now, how is the last Surgeon General before under Clinton, I remember, you know, they got rid of her when she was saying, like, this drug war sucks, you know. Boom, she's gone, you know, not allowed to say that. So I'm wondering what he's going to say. You know, yeah, well, for medical, whatever. And so this is shaping up pretty good. Now, there's five people running for the nomination of the Republicans, but Congressman Jeff Flake is favored, of course. And so I don't see how they benefit either side at all by you participating. I that's why we were so careful over the last couple of days to make sure all the paperwork is. I wanted to walk it through myself because I have a little bit more experience than a lot of these guys. And I'm like, look. No, I. This is where they'll get you, and they'll get you here, and they'll get you there, and they'll get you this, and they'll get you, you know. So I'm going, all right, you know, let's make sure we got this all filed in correctly. So hopefully, you know, you're done, it's ready to go, and all we got to do is make sure that they count. Because the way it works is the reason you're able to qualify so late in the process is because there's not a libertarian on there. And there was a woman that filed, but she filed thousands of signatures. I mean, wow, man, who is this? Oh, she was a Democrat that didn't get enough signatures, and just changed the word Democrat, the libertarian on her paperwork and turned it in. And they went,
you know, Ernie,
nice try.
And I know you know this about me. If there's one thing that I have absolutely no interest in talking about, it's the political process. I mean, I don't know and I don't care who I'm going to take votes from. And I don't know and I don't care who's concerned about having me in the race or who doesn't care. I just has no interest to me whatsoever. I'm interested in talking about freedom. I don't, you know, maybe I'll be pleasantly surprised. You know, I understand that, you know, Jeff Flake is promoting himself as a pro-freedom guy. Maybe he is. I don't know. I can't wait to talk about the drug war. Maybe he's going to say, you know what, Mark, I agree. People should be in charge of their own bodies. I mean, if you can't agree with that, how can you, I mean, shame on you if you call yourself for freedom. You can't be for freedom if you don't at least acknowledge the rights of other people to be in charge of their own bodies, right? I mean,
you
got
to
start somewhere, right? Can you start somewhere? How about you're in charge of you and I'm in charge of me? If we can't agree on that, that's fine, but don't call yourself pro-freedom. Don't say you're promoting freedom. You're promoting tyranny, okay? And so, you know, I'm going to get up there and talk about really probably the history of the Republicans and the Democrats, right? It's called, do you like everything that we have now? I mean, if you like everything we have now, then I'm going to, don't vote for me because I'm not for everything we have now, right?
Well, are you going to vote?
No, I don't vote.
You know, I haven't voted since 2002, and I'm sitting here thinking, I'm going, you know, I may go just in single shot a write-in for you just to make sure that you get it. Because that's why you're able to do this at such a late process, is because to be printed on the primary ballot, the deadline was like in May or something, or June or whatever. But you find it, well, you know, all you got to do is win the primary. Okay, well, if you're the only one up there, you get one write-in, you win. But one of the minimum requirements is that you needed in Arizona, it's 133 petition signatures to get on the ballot in the primary, because it's based on voter registration and, you know, it's a lot lower for libertarians. So we go, all right, so 133. Now they're changing that law too. They're like, man, they're sick of exactly this happening. That's why they're changing the law, and they're totally revamping the entire election process here in Arizona for a lot of reasons. And one of them is this. So what happens is now you go, for this probably last chance we're going to be able to do it this way, and you go in and you say, all right, I need at least as many write-ins as I needed on the petition so I can be printed on the general election ballot. So you go, okay, so 133. Think we can get that? Heck yeah.
You know, Ernie, I'm not going to even spend any time encouraging people to vote.
None. Don't worry about it.
That's not my issue.
Not your job.
I'm not. If people don't want to vote, they don't have to vote.
That's my job.
That's people are free to not vote if they choose. They're free to do, I mean, in a free country, people are free to do whatever they want as long as they're not interfering with other people. So I'm not going to tell people how to run their lives. I'm not going to even tell them to get out and vote. I mean, if they don't want to vote, if they decide they want to spend an hour of their time watching TV or doing anything else than running down to the polls and voting, hey, I respect that. I'm not telling people what to do.
You know,
but
the reason
if they are voters, if they are voters and you're for freedom, then I'm probably the guy.
Yep. Uh-huh. At least a guy to listen to and entertainment for the process. You know, the one thing that you had a big impact on me finally just, you know, it was in 2002 after I went to the polls, and it's usually a checkoff box. You know, I need to get milk. I got to drop this off at the whatever. I got to pick up this. And I voted today, right? And when you check off a box, you get an overall feeling, okay, I accomplished something. Okay, I checked that off. Yeah, I feel a little bit better. Yeah, it's one less thing off my mind. When I voted in 2002, it was so bad. Well, I knew what was going on and how corrupt this process was that I felt bad and dirty for doing it. And I go, you know, I trust myself. I'm not doing it anymore. I'm done. I'll run. I mean, in the next election cycle, I ran for U.S. Senate against McCain, but I didn't vote. And they bring it up. They go, you don't even vote. I go, you are correct. Let's talk about it. No, we don't want to talk about it.
You know, to me, I'm happy to talk about it. You know, my attitude is this, Ernie. The reason we're in the problems we're in this country is because we have lost the battle for the hearts and minds. People's hearts and minds aren't pro-freedom anymore. If we can win that battle, good things are going to happen, whether people vote or not.
Good things are happening. Like Mark J. Victor agreeing to represent libertarian philosophy. None of this party crap. Philosophy, and keep the definition of the word meaning libertarian. Oh, we're going to have some fun here in Arizona, and you get to watch.
Rhodes? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Oh, we're looking at, you know, we hadn't even looked. I mean, seriously, this is how much we care about these guys. So during the break, we're looking. Okay, Jeff Flake, USA, he's just, you know, he's been running for president since he was 16. I mean, you know, he's grows up in the Mormon church and the culture here. He goes, I'm a conservative. It's a political science kind of guy. He works for the Goldwater Institute. He's pretty and blonde and, you know, pretty wife and kids. And he go, and he's running for Congress. He runs for Congress. He's been in Congress since, God, 94, I think. He was part of that, you know, Republican Revolution, Newt Gingrich invasion thing, 94, as I remember. So he goes in there, or later, I don't remember, it doesn't matter. Anyway, he's been in there a while. So he goes in, and now it's his turn. He's running for U.S. Senate. I'm telling you, this guy, sky's the limit on him. He has been, you know, just kind of, you know, doing what he's supposed to. He gets to vote no on bad stuff. You know, they give him a pass on some things, but he's definitely there to vote for the man, you know, and a lot of stuff. Like, he didn't vote for the TARP, but I know that he would have if they needed him. And he's part of the crowd. But the thing is, they need to save him for later. So they had to sacrifice John Shattuck, you know, to bring it back for it to, you know, here we go. National socialization of the economy. So he's up there advocating for, you know, I'm the freedom, free market kind of guy, except for the Patriot Act. And I'm the free market kind of freedom. We defend freedom, except when it comes to military arresting you on the street. And I'm a freedom-oriented kind of guy, except when we got to go vote for war. So, I mean, it's just, it's weird, weird. Now we
What does he say about the drug war?
Well, they don't, you know, it's all this, I don't know. I mean, I'm looking at his stuff here. It doesn't say anything about the drug war, you know, and it goes,
I wouldn't want to talk about the drug war either if I supported it and I tried to pretend I was for freedom, right? I mean, that'd be the last thing I was wanting to talk about.
Well, he has, you go to, it's jeffflake.com, you know, and, you know, I mean, I already got started getting the emails, you know, Mark Victor's not a flake, you know, that kind of crap, you know, but it's, get
that into just depends who you ask, Ernie.
Yeah, right. I don't get into, you know, all that. I don't even care about them. I mean, you know, you just do your thing and, you know, you don't even waste time with their crap, you know, but, let's see. In the past, I supported approach to immigration reform, increasing border security coupled with temporary worker program. That was another thing. He got a lot of grief because he's kind of trying to walk the middle of the road on this immigration deal. And they do these votes, you know, like they'll say, yeah, I vote for a secure fence. You know, I vote for construction of, you know, this. I vote for legal requirements necessary to improve the blah, blah, blah. I vote for, you know, I mean, on and on and on. But they don't, you read the actual legislation or you look at what they're doing or what, you know, it's just party games. I mean, it's just, you know, just make you look good and so on. Okay, now here we get drug trafficking. Voted to allow the Department of Defense to assign members of armed forces to assist INS in preventing the entry of drug traffickers into. Okay, voted to allow.
Well, so let's get the military involved in the drug war.
Military on the border, kind of whatever. Wow. Voted to allow the Department of Defense to assign members of armed forces to assist Customs Service inspection of cargo vehicles and aircraft at U.S. entry point. Oh, yeah. This is, you know, military and, okay. Voted for 49.6 million for anti-terrorist and illicit narcotics detection equipment at the. So he's for the drug war. Voted in efforts with Mexico to prevent methamphetamine smuggling. Voted to establish U.S.-Mexico border violence task force. Voted for. Yeah, okay. So he's a drug warrior. All right. So then we go to this rich guy. Now here's someone. I can see what's going on here. He was has a, you know, a history of, you know, he's a poor Hispanic. That, you know, grows up, goes in the army, finds some discipline, gets an education, becomes a surgeon, you know, success story. But, you know, the way they describe this, of course, he's running as a Democrat. You know, Rich learned tough early lessons about economic disparities and social injustice. Well, that's code word for progressive big government. We need a program. So you're going to really muck up this entire thing here. Whatever their game plan is here, it's, I guarantee they're both for the drug war. I guarantee they're, but I don't know what this guy's going to do on, you know, things like Patriot Act or military arrest and whatever, but they're not going to be as freedom oriented as the rhetoric coming out of Mark J. Victor's mouth. And it's going to be a stark comparison that is going to explain why there's no way in hell they want you to participate in the debates. And they will do any and everything they can to keep a trial attorney out of these debates, which plays into what we want to play with and have fun anyway.
I don't know anything about that. I don't know what their take is, and I don't really care what their take is. You know, my attitude is if I can get up and I have an opportunity to talk to people about why they ought to support freedom, regardless of their personal views and regardless about, you know, reasons why they personally, how they live their lives, those kinds of things. I mean, it just doesn't matter, right? I mean, we ought to all be able to come together, no matter where we're from, no matter how you were raised, no matter whether your economic status was poor or rich or something in between or whatever the color of your skin is or whatever country you're from, we ought to all be able to get together and say, hey, how about this? You be in charge of you. I'll be in charge of me. You define and pursue your own happiness. I'll define and pursue my own happiness. Let's have this thing called government, and then the government gets involved when one of us trespasses on the other. When one of us interferes with the other, then we get this thing called the government, which is our agent, right? It gets involved to help protect our freedom. I mean, why is that so complex? I mean, I've still never understood. You know, people say to us, Ernie, well, we're looking at pie in the sky. It's too complex. It would never work. I don't get that argument. I mean, people say it all the time. I don't know why they think that the notion of being in charge of yourself is so complex.
Because it doesn't serve the state. Here, let's go with this Carmona, his priorities. He has a banner, a drop down that says priorities, okay? Creating jobs, fixing a broken immigration system, balancing the budget responsibly, holding Washington accountable, preserving Social Security and Medicare, our national security, protecting women's health care, providing for our veterans. And I guarantee that you could take exactly the same categories, worded exactly the same way, and be 180 degrees from what he's doing here. Creating jobs, that's going to be eliminating taxes and regulation, getting out of the way, and permits and all this other crap.
Hey, Ernie, no. I would love it if someone created a website for me that said priorities. And when you clicked on it, opened up, and it was a huge drop down with lots of categories. And the only thing there was promote freedom. That was it. Wouldn't that be great? What is his priority?
Done.
He's to promote freedom.
Done. This is. I tell you what we're doing. I'll be open with this. We the software behind that, we went 7 years on the functioning of Freedom's Phoenix. Open source. Anybody wants it, knock yourself out. So I'm providing that to create whatever domain that you got come up, and I'll train the guys as part of my volunteer or whatever on how to use it. And you can do whatever, create your own categories, do it, you know, knock yourself out. Heck, Democrat, Republicans want my, you know, hardwired thing, you know, it's kind of, consider it like a Facebook framework or a WordPress, or what I give it to you, without the data, of course. But, I mean, you know, here's the framework, knock yourself out. Because I am just all about communicating. I even let the neocons and the communists come on Freedom's Phoenix, have their say, I don't care. So the thing is that I insist that I am free to support you, that I can do what I want to do. And there's not a damn thing you can say about it anyway. So I'm going to go out and do whatever I want. Well, the thing is that if you go over $5,000 in donating to your campaign, well, then you got to start filling out paperwork. Well, you may need about that much to, you know, for a couple of months of campaigning, having the website done and people doing different stuff, but just cost and gas and whatever. But I mean, the rest of it, it's going to be up to the people. It's going to be up to us. You know, it's going to be up to, you know, individuals want to go out and see this as an opportunity, just like they did with Dr. Paul for the Levolution, to go out there and advocate for freedom. And every single one of these that they do, I know when he's talking about, you know, providing for our veterans, does that include bringing them home and stopping these freaking wars? Does it say that? No, he doesn't say it. There's nothing anti-war here. You know, there's neither of them. They don't even mention it. I'm like, wow. You have to be up there. I mean, it's just for us to have an opportunity to just advocate for what you're saying. Freedom's the answer. What's the question? And I can think of no one better. They're going, Ernie, you got to do this. Ernie, you got to do this. And I go, Mark's willing to do it. And they go, okay, Mark's got to do this. We were thinking Ernie be better. No. Mark's better. And Ernie behind the scenes, you know, just advocating for freedom with no limits. No limits. I get to do whatever I want. You know, and I bring it on. Well, what do you coordinate with Mark? Mark and I don't coordinate. I just have the same perspective, the same overlap, the same whatever, and a different flavor. He's going to do whatever he's going to do. He's a criminal defense trial attorney that's busy. He doesn't have time. But maybe we do. Oh, game freaking on. Oh, you guys get a front row seat.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what the readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. FreedomsPhoenix.com constantly providing the information, the real news about government policies, and the real relationship we all have with the coercive government. The real condition of the economy, innovations in technology, breakthroughs in energy, health, and computer science. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media. The corporate media, nothing more than distributors of government propaganda, but now there's an alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com. Constant news updates on the issues that affect your life in the most important ways. With liberty and property under constant attack, FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda, and it encourages the participation of its readers. Go to FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com. The revolution between the ears has already happened. It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
And Mark J. Vicker, independence declaring kind of guy. You know, one thing that they're talking about, yeah, we do an endorsement page. Who would be the people that would come out and endorse and known us for lots of, I mean, a lot of high-end people. I mean, this may be, you know, it's going to be, you know, even Ron Paul would be like, you know, he doesn't endorse third parties and not incumbents running for it and that kind of thing. That, you know, so it'll be kind of iffy there. But it would be interesting. You know, he come out for a flake. I wouldn't think that'd be prudent at this juncture. But you have guys like you know, some people that are popular with the right that would be, oh yeah, Jeff Flake's better than whatever. And all of a sudden they got Sheriff Richard Mack that knows Mark well, going, yeah, and he's running for Congress in Texas, I think. I'm not sure what party, but. So I'm going, yeah, we got a nice long line of good people that, you know, that this is going to have an impact. I mean, they've done this before. In 96, they had, J.D. Hayworth. J.D. Hayworth versus Sam Coppersmith, which was a state chair of the Democratic Party, for J.D. Hayworth, which was a talk, sportscaster in one of the local things here. And he became a congressman until a Democrat beat him because he's just... You know, butthead. Well, what happened? The Libertarian Bob Anderson, you know Bob, he was the candidate, and they ignored him. Everything, even though he was up on the podium and he gave the greatest responses and the short to the point, kind of kicking their butt, the Republican would never acknowledge that he was even the race. Then 2 years later, it was the same three guys running again, and all of a sudden, then because he barely won. He wrapped his arms and legs around Bob and, oh, my good, you know, freedom-oriented, loving brother here, Mr. Anderson. We're just the same. So they changed their tactics totally, went 180 degrees, they ignored him in the race, and then all of a sudden, you know, he was their bestest buddy. And I'm like, and Bob is, you know, he's self-confident. He's like, yeah, whatever, you know. But so I'm interested in which tack they're going to take with you. They're going to try to ignore that you're there, or they're going to embrace you. And the reason is because I know whatever they think's in their best interest. But what I'm going to do is the same thing I did with Dr. Paul. I'll just tell everybody. Because, as you know, it has nothing to do with Mark. It's because I want to. Because I can. Because I. You know, come rest my butt. Just do it. It's rock and roll. Do I get to have my First Amendment expression of one thing? That I'm like, Mark's over here. This is what he's for. This is his name. This is what he looks like. This should keep him up on the podium. I want him up there. How come he's not up there? He needs to be up there. And if he's not up there, I'm going to bitch about it, and everybody's going to know that he's not up there. You know, how many times have I done that? You know, the more you try to exclude, the more I'm like, hello. Because this is the message. Because what do you think is going to happen, Mark, by the next election cycle? This is 2012. We're going to 14. You know, what kind of country you think we're going to be in? Where are we progressing? What's the trend? What are you worried about?
Well, we all know what the trend is. I mean, we're not going anyplace good. I mean, we know that, right? We're going, economically speaking, we're going over a cliff. We don't know exactly where the edge is, but we know there's a cliff there. And, you know, our civil rights, I mean, we're going off a cliff. In virtually every area, our country is headed in completely the wrong direction. And, you know, it's a huge mistake to try to blame the Democrats or the Republicans. I mean, really, it's both of them. I mean, we've had Republican presidents, we've had Republican Congress, we got Republicans on the Supreme Court. It doesn't make any difference. It doesn't even slow down the growth of government. We've had Democrats as president. We got one right now. You know, I heard something the other day that President Obama has come out now and said in his second term he's going to, you know, do something about the drug war. I'm kind of like, where have you been? You've been president now almost 4 years. I mean, we got a good chance to look at you. What are you doing?
Heck, he promised not to bother people in California, and then he goes and bothers them.
Well, I remember when he was running for president, he was talking about he was a peace president, right? He was going to end the war. I mean, so, you know, neither the Republicans nor the Democrats have done anything to even show an interest in slowing down the tremendous growth of government. So, you know, as Americans, we just got to either get comfortable with the fact that we're a socialist country and that we're, you know, we're doing everything we can possibly do to get a more tyrannical, civil rights suppressing kind of nation of surveillance that regulates and watches and taxes everything, and that's who we are as Americans, or we need to say, you know what, that's not what America's about. And I mean, we all know, Ernie, I mean, look, we're not the superpower of the world by accident. We're the superpower of the world because we've had more freedom relative to other countries. I mean, it's really that simple. Show me a place that's got lots of freedom, and I'll show you a place where people have a pretty good standard of living. And that's just how it works. Capitalism works great. It raises standards of living for everybody who's interested in raising their standard of living. And that's what America's about. I mean, if America's about something, if you look at the founding fathers and you read what they had to say, really in both the Federalist Papers and the Anti-Federalist Papers that everybody forgets about, these guys were about freedom. They were very aware of trying to preserve freedom and individual liberty and individual rights, responsibilities, being in charge of yourself. That's what America was founded on. We have not been that now for a long time. So really the question presented is that who we are? We're going through an identity crisis. We have for a long time. Who are we as Americans? And I'm just standing up. Guys like me and you and Ron Paul and so many other people are just standing up and saying, look, we're about individual liberty. We're about free markets. We're about individual responsibility. That's our case. And, you know, to this point, it's been rejected. I hope people are going to change their minds. That's why when we were talking earlier about winning hearts and minds, nothing's going to happen in this country until people change the way they think about freedom and the way the individual relates to the government.
Well, they're going to relate to you. And all you have to do is just expose them to you. And we got a couple of months that we can, or at least a month or more, that we can get all the issues up and fill up the web page and all this kind of stuff for you. So people can go and learn about you. And one thing that they don't realize is how many articles you've written, how many interviews you've done, the television stations there, they know you more than they know me now. You know, they have interviewed you on every time anything happens with anything legally, you know, Trayvon Martin freaking Florida, they got you in studio. I mean,
not only that, Ernie, but I don't know if you're even aware of this. I represent Elizabeth Johnson, and this is the baby Gabriel case that's garnered so much attention nationally, and we're set for trial in September. And as of this moment, it looks like we're going to try the case in September. So I get attention. Good Morning America, they call me on a fairly frequent basis, and all these various shows, national shows, the Court TV people who are now have a different name, In Focus or something like that. You know, so this thing is going to go to trial, and I'm going to get a lot more attention probably for a short period of time while that case is at trial just for being a criminal defense attorney, which is fine with me. That's what I do, you know. So, there's going to be probably a lot of press surrounding the next few months in any event.
Well, you know, the one thing that comes out from all of this is video, you know, and interviews and how you always twist it and segue it into freedom issues. And there's so much material. It's just, we just throw it up there. I mean, the fact that your Marine and Desert Storm shield doesn't, you know, kind of sets them back a little bit too. And so you have a lot of people that you know in the freedom. Right now, you're at Freedom Fest in Las Vegas. You just left, you know, right after we filed the paperwork and everything. Boom, you and Mike are up there, you know, meeting with the boys. And when you get done with this interview. You're going to go out and talk to the people and so on. I guarantee you there's a bunch of people by the end of the day, they're like, hey, Mark Victor's running for U.S. Senate in Arizona. I want to hear all the stories.
Ernie, it is what it is. I'm not a politician. Like I've said, I talked to the New Times already, and I said, I'm not going to change or shade or modify anything that I've ever said. I mean, you and I have been doing interviews together on the radio, on various, you know, things, your show, my show. I used to have a show years and years ago. There is a 20-year record of things that you and I have said out there. And you know what? It's exactly the same as things that I'm saying today. It's exactly the same as things I'm going to say in 10 years or 20 years going forward.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question?
Yeah, that's just how it is. And so I'm not the least bit worried about somebody pulling up some interview that I did 20 years ago on the radio in some station. I mean, you remember you and I once did a radio interview with Russell Pierce. Remember that?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
That was interesting. What were we talking about then?
Drug war.
We were talking about how ridiculous the drug war was, right?
And off camera, he'd agree, but that's not political.
Wasn't that embarrassing? That was a real shocker for me. To get Russell Pierce off the air, saying, you know what, I agree with you guys, but I'll never say it publicly. I know you're right, but I'll never say it because people won't elect me. And guys like you and I, our blood starts boiling when we hear things like that.
I have no respect for people that are just, they're just untruth tellers. You know, they're not accurately, not only are they not representing the promise that government's made to leave us alone, the whole purpose of them is just to, you know, make sure that we're left alone to pursue our own happiness,
Ernie,
and protect our rights.
At the end of the day, I'm running against Santa Claus.
And explain that real quick.
I don't have any gifts. I'm not here telling people they got handouts. I'm taking things away. They're not going to like that, but that's how it is.
Yep, and they're going to learn something. I guarantee you hear Mark, you learn something. Well, here's to the learning a-coming.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Make them remember, we are not afraid!
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. I'm Ernest Hancock and some other independence declaring kinds of individuals, generation after this one, okay? Like as in next. Here we have Alex and Ross. They're in, they're good act. They're behind Don't Tread on Meme. Don't tread on Meme. I know. It's Don't Tread on Me. I like that even better. Don't Tread on Meme. Okay, well, it's DontTreadOnMeme.com because, you know, it's a meme. It's a viral concept that's hitting kind of, man, this dime card thing is going viral. In fact, right now, doing Bastille Day, it's going France. I mean, they're just... Oh, we got silver over here, too, getting all... there's competition for the silver calculator now, an iPhone and Android. There's all kinds of different ways to do it. I mean, here we go. So, they did their bit. We got the monolith. We're out there. We got to go unload it from the trailer. I'm like, hey, man, I need some strong backs, man. I could lift it if I wanted to. But, I'm like, I don't want to. So what we're going to go ahead and do is get all kind of depacked and everything. Then I got to go on a trip again. So next week we're going to be doing reruns. But because I'm taking off. That's real vacation. Just doing an on-road thing, man. That was, taxing. Now, Alex didn't go to Pork Fest. We missed him up there. But he was holding down the fort here. Ross went up. Got to meet with a lot of people and so on. Different things. We just had... Pete Iyer on in the first hour talking about Adamo in a cage now. And so we got, you know, a lot of cop block stuff that's going on still. Mark J. Victor running for U.S. Senate. That would be fun.
Go, Mark.
And then, so there's a lot of things that, you know, it's always Arizona. I mean, you know, and I'll tell you why, because it's always Arizona. And there is an atmosphere here of just, you know, we don't have to confront the man just to be ornery. You know, it's just to make points. I mean, you know, why are we doing this stuff? Because, you know, what else are you going to do? You just let them they get away with whatever they can get away with. So we got to, you know, like not. Well, things are getting so bad. I mean, just I can go through just Freedom's Phoenix headlines of it's imploding now, not later. It's happening now, and it's hitting around the world, Asia, China, Europe, and they're not telling you. Now, they go, well, we're doing and kind of, and they'll have meetings and whatever. Right up to the point that the dollar is done, and then what? It's going to get really, really bad, really, really fast. And there are a lot of people that are thinking about, you know, am I going to stay here? You know, can I go somewhere else? I mean, is it, you know, don't ever think that it's not going to be the exact same decisions in the 30s in Nazi Germany, and people are going, you know, well, I'll just stick it out. You know, but you can't make a mistake either. There's a story that somebody was telling me. I think it was Bill Buford. He was talking about at Porkfest. He goes, yeah, there was a family, or was it Boston? One of those guys was saying, there's a story of a family, you know, that was wealthy, had some money, and they wanted to get as far away from what was coming as possible. So they left Germany in the 30s, and they moved to the Marshall Islands in the Pacific. And then here comes the Japanese and the U.S. There ain't no Marshall Islands no more. I'm going, so you got to be careful. You know, where do you go? You know, I don't know, but we got to think in that terms. It could even be here. We can go hide in some cave somewhere. I just need to make sure that we keep breathing in and out, because there's going to be a reshuffling. And the importance is not now trying to get over who's in control of the wheelhouse of the Titanic as it slips beneath the waves. Why are you wasting time on that? You know, we'll take and, you know, run for U.S. Senate, you know, with Mark Victor, and I've done my share and different things and so on, so that we can advocate for what should be the way it should be, what the promises were. Government doesn't work. I want my money back. I mean, you know, it's that simple. But, you know, what's the promise that they made? What was it they were promising us? Well, I'm telling you, that promise, that understanding, that education, because of the internet and Generation Next, that is what we need to be advocating because of the reshuffle that's coming. There's going to be a reshuffling. And when that reshuffling hits, you know, who's going to be there advocating for the individual? Where does that come from? Well, it's Generation Next and guys like Alex and Ross. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thanks for having us, Ernie.
All right, get up close to the microphone, Alex, or nobody's going to tilt it up there. There you go.
Okay.
Mick Jagger it.
Can you hear me now?
Get some lips on it, man.
Okay.
All right. Now, this is one thing I want to make sure that we understand. As you guys coming by, we're going to help get, you know, things cleaned up and organized for the next wave here, but I'm wondering what you guys are seeing coming. I mean, I remember when I was your age, mm-hmm. You know, I had four children. I'm, you know, advocating for, I just want to be left alone. I'm looking in the future. I see what's coming. And what I was worried about then is here. What are you worried about? I mean, let's put this out to 2020, you know, two more presidential election cycles, eight more years. And what do you think, what are you preparing for? What are you advocating?
Geez. Well, I subscribe to this really great newsletter called The Dollar Vigilante. Jeff Berwick, he was at Porkfest and Libertopia. He'll be at Freedom Fest. That's his newsletter. And it's all about getting yourself mobile and being you know, nimble and getting your investments out of the dollar collapse. And the acronym he always uses is the end of the monetary system as we know it. But yeah, the newsletter for July came out, and it was interesting data from like the FDIC or something, how like it showed January through December of bank failures per month, the statistical how much, you know, in history, how many banks have failed per month. And September is just massive standout for some reason. There's like, you know, monetary crises in September for some reason. So that's coming up, and I don't know if, you know, take it for
wait till September and see what happens.
Yeah, so that's something I'm kind of looking at right now in the near future. But and then he also in the newsletter showed how just there's all these riots going on around the world, and there's just like hundreds of thousands of people all together. Not in one place, but all together. The amount of people that are out in city squares, but it's not being reported here. Like,
you know, this is the, we'll talk about it. We got time, but you know, Alex, I want to get your perspective on, you know, what do you think's coming? What are you preparing for? What are you worried about?
You know, whether it's just conversations with friends or even just, you know, acquaintances or people you work with, everybody just seems to have a very bleak outlook for the future. You know, jobs are bad. You know, the national debt is out of control. We're losing our civil liberties. We have drones in the skies. They're going through, you know, hacking our computers. The government is, you know, we don't know when they're just going to come around and just arrest us for anything they want. So everybody's just getting their stuff together. Like, where can we go? How can we get out of there? How can we preserve our wealth? What can we do to, you know, try to make the future not so, you know, devastating or bleak?
Have you guys seen the OmniCorp for RoboCop?
Yeah, I saw it. I heard it on your show yesterday.
Oh, man. It is freaky.
Yeah.
OmniCorp, you know, back in the 80s or something, they did RoboCop, and it was a dystopian future of Detroit the way it is now. Uh-huh. And they have a private company. Oh, we're going to clean house, and they do RoboCop. Well, of course, they got these, you know, battle droids. It's like Terminator, you know? And it's like when they did for Minority Report with pre-crime, and it was like it was a real thing. And you're going, what the heck, you know? Well, it was a promo for a movie.
Yeah.
Well, the RoboCop thing, they got drones in the air, and they got patrols of, you know, robots going around and all this. This is what's coming.
Yeah.
And they are.
That commercial is all about, you know, we can't put any officers' lives in danger. Wouldn't you love to live in a world where no officer would ever be hurt or wounded?
And a robot can lay waste to you.
Well, exactly. In the commercial, well, these robots used to protect our battlefields. Oh, so basically just saying, like, our neighborhoods are our new battlefields now.
Well, speaking of, we shouldn't let, you know, I was hiking Squaw Peak last night, and this police helicopter buzzed us within like 20 yards. I could have threw a rock into the engine intake, I swear.
And
they were just being jerks. They were showing off.
I know why.
What?
Because they can. Okay, everything's so much easier when you understand that one point. Because they can. Wow. More with Generation Next when we come back here on Declare Your Independence.
Are we next?
Arizona has been one of the hottest real estate markets in the past, up until the last couple of years. Homes that were once going for $500,000 to $1 million in prestigious areas are now going for less than half of what the original purchase price was. That makes it a very good time to buy. So if you were ever thinking of retiring to Arizona's inviting climate and laid-back and friendly lifestyle, now is the time. That's where I can help. This is Donna Hancock with Brangus Realty, and I have provided a way for you to search for properties that are of interest to you, all at your own convenience and without having to give out any personal information. Visit my webpage at donnahancock.com to start your search today. And when you're ready to make a move to Arizona's warm and sunny climate, please feel free to call or text me at 602-828-1819. Many are working hard to make sure Arizona is not only a beautiful place to live, but a free and peaceful one as well. So what are you waiting for? Make your move today by calling 602-828-1819. 1819, and don't forget to visit my webpage at donnahancock.com.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800, 602-264-2800, and now, Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. I'm Ernest Hancock, and Alex and Ross took off.
Yeah, no, I'm still here. Ross can't take care of his dog.
Yeah, you know, he's got, you know, all of a sudden I see out the window here, there's this thing going by. What the heck is that? It's a dog. Oh, it's Laika.
Yeah, it's his dog. He can't even take care of his dog, and you're relying on your future on him, depending on your future on him, for the freedom movement.
Well, didn't he have him in the V? I don't know why he put him in. What, did he break out?
Yeah, the dog out the window or something.
I would like to saw that. You know, I don't know how he did that. Well, this is, you know, we're, and that's what, wherever Ross is going to go, they got to take dogs.
Yeah.
And it's a good dog, too, even though he killed one of my favorite chickens.
Yep.
You know, I don't know the chicken's names, but it was the pretty one. I go, as long as it's not the pretty one. Well, that's what I thought. So this is, and we lost five. We had 20. We're down to 10. You know, because there's a coyote out here, and he got three and then two, and it was right before we left on the trip that we did. And I'm like, oh, you know, so we kind of closed up and found where he was coming in. But I'm like, yeah, you know, we tie one up and kind of lure him in. I got a crossbow just for that. Say, here, done. I win. And in that, top of the food chain. But, you know, better off just plug the hole. So this is, I'm glad that we're having a chance to talk. We got to go do some work, but I'm glad that we got a chance to talk about a lot of the things that you've been involved. You kind of came in. Yeah, you knew Andrew at work. You guys used to work together. Mm-hmm. And how did he suck you into this?
Basically, I met Andrew through the whole Ron Paul thing. You know, we both had the same ideas and with the sound money principles, and we were both Alex Jones fans. And then I remember I went with him to Ed Viejo's at Knock Knee Lobster. That's kind of how we all met about learning about Freedom's Phoenix.
Ed Viejo is the head of the meetup for Ron Paul. Mm-hmm. You know, he kind of inherited that from, you know, getting started and everything, and he was willing to do the work, and like, you win, man.
Yeah,
you know?
Ed's famous in the Ron Paul movie. Yeah, everybody knows who Ed is.
Yeah, so Ed's, you know, he's a butt buster on, you know, getting it done. Now, he's going to, he's got a chip in. We had it. Yeah, go put that up, Don. You know, Ed Vallejo's chip in thing for him going to Tampa. And so we keep that up every now and then. We'll put that up there. You'll go support Ed because he's taking they're vanning it or something, cross country.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, ouch. But anyway, that's one way of doing it. So they're going to be driving, and I'd be like, that'd be as bad as driving cross country with Ernie. God, he's loud, man. He's, you know, my ears hurt. Make it stop. So he's going to be going to Tampa, and we want to help him there. But he had meetings all the time. We're at this Knock Kneed Lobster's restaurant in downtown East Phoenix. And a lot of the guys, that was their first experience. They go and just hang out with people there, and then stuff happens. What happened with you?
I think I made a joke to him, Ed, when I first showed up. I'm like, is this the Obama meetup? And he got all mad. He goes, no, if you want to go to the Obama meetup, it's down the road at the Federal Reserve place that they, I don't know if they print the bills there or they distribute them or whatever. I was like, okay, this is pretty funny. This is going to be an interesting meeting. But yeah, it was awesome. Met a lot of like-minded people. And then I started coming down here and helping with the signs and stuff. But then when Ross came around, he's like, you know, forget the signs and everything. We need to attack the money supply. We need, it's all about the money. So when he just came out with dime cards, I'm like, you know what? This is something I can really get into.
And it was, you know, how is it that you got involved in the economic part of it? I mean, what sparked your interest?
Well, it's all about the money, you know, and that we're just talking about, you know, self-preservation, how we're going to survive this thing, or if things get worse, you know, if you have money, you're always going to make it through, you know, despite how corrupt the government is or how bad things get. If you can make sure you can preserve your wealth and you have something to buy with, barter with, then you're going to make it out a lot better than most people will. So that's how I got all into it. That's what I'm most interested in, is how I can preserve my wealth and keep my money.
Yeah, money?
Yeah. The little money that I have.
You know, the thing is, it's amazing to a lot of the young people that are the activists. A lot of them are very poor. And I understand that. I was, you know, poor, been poor, still poor. But a lot of the younger guys now, there's a little bit more of a financial discipline. They mm-hmm. understand. I don't know who's convinced you guys that there is a reason to acquire some value, put it into some precious metals or something, and, you know, keep putting it and trying to ride this thing out. I mean, what convinced you that that's a necessary thing to do?
I think I was talking about how when I was 18, I bought a piece of real estate. I put 20% down, and then I watched it all just disappear. So that was like my big wake-up call. I'm like, wait, how did this just happen? Like, this was supposed to be solid. You know, real estate's always going to go up. I put my money in. It's supposed to be a stable investment. Next thing you know, it all disappears. So I'm like, wait a minute. What happened here? And that's how I got into this whole credit banking thing where, you know, the Federal Reserve's able to just, you know, make money out of thin air, basically, and then fractional reserve banking that the banks can do. And they can create these bubbles in real estate or in the stock market, wherever they want it, or whatever they just pump the money into. So that's what really woke me up. I'm like, wait a minute. It's like, you know,
I did what they said to do.
Yeah, exactly. I
played the game. I did it exactly. And I got screwed. Exactly. You SOBs.
I did what my mom and dad said was smart, that my neighbor said was smart, that everybody said was smart, and then it wasn't. You know, just all this disappeared. So after that, I'm like, you know, I'm going to put my money in precious metals. And, you know, I've doubled, tripled my money since I've been doing it. I was buying, I remember I was like 18, 19 years old in college. Probably the only one searching, surfing Kitco in the school library and watching silver at $8, $9, $10. I'm like, hey, I'm going to go buy this stuff and go into the coin dealer guy when, you know, nobody would be there and I'd be the only one buying them. And, you know, it's worked out good for me. And, you know, I think it's, you know, there's better investments, of course, than just precious metals, but it's a currency. It's a money. You always need money.
There's better investments? Like what?
I don't know. Mining stocks, maybe foreign stocks, foreign producers, stuff. You know, Peter Schiff thing.
Well, you know, the thing is that you still have to keep it. It's good right up until it's not.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's always this, this timing thing, or you got to keep track of it, or you got to. But if you know in the end what's going to happen out there,
mm-hmm.
you just buy silver and you just wait.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it went down. Good. That means I get to buy more.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's always going to be worth something, and that really can't be said for with currencies, fiat currencies, so.
Yeah, this is, so what are you planning as far as your lifestyle? I mean, are you like, I need to find a place, you know, that's one reason why Don and I went across the country. I mean, I've been around quite a bit over the years. I've traveled, and you have different perspectives and mindsets, and, you know, kind of what you're looking for and what's important and not, and you have different weights and valuations that you put on different characteristics of different places and how the government and the laws and the terrain and the climate and where your grandkids are and all this other stuff. And we went around the country kind of trying to keep an open mind and talking to people. And, you know, I think we're kind of, you know, Arizona is on top of our list right now. Because the thing is that even the other countries are on, and not, certainly not off the list. Heck, you know, living out in the freaking ocean is not, a freaking space station is not, Mars is not off the list.
Yeah.
Okay? But the thing is I'm looking, I'm going, they all get bad too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, every 3 weeks, all of a sudden you'll, boom. The government changes.
Mm-hmm.
The whole mindset changes. The new junta de la coup changes.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm like, wow. At least in America, we have what Dr. Paul was going on about. At least we understand the heritage, the definition of the words we have in our education. You know, there's a lot of reasons why we may be able to have a common language that we can survive this to the next shuffling. And the shuffling is coming.
Yep.
And it's going to be political. It's going to be economic. It's going to be social. It's going to be spiritual. It's going to be religious. It's going to be a big, giant reshuffling is coming. And I'm wondering, you know, are you guys going to try and be part of it? Are you guys going to try and wait it out? Do you have the ability to just weather it? Are you going to try and influence it? Well, we're going to find out.
We're going to space.
And yes.
Me and Ross are building a rocket ship.
I invited the government this time.
You invited them?
I did it.
Oh,
I finally did.
You said you
was
come.
I not supposed to invite the government to space?
Yeah, Ross is back in playing with his dog.
I like to myself sheriff of space.
I like to, you know, cyber emperor of out there. Yeah. Now what?
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Yep. Welcome back. Welcome back here. Declare your independence of me, Ernest Hancock. You know, I'm the one thing that I'm really I want to emphasize, and I don't think it gets emphasized enough, and it's this. There is going to be a reshuffling. It is going to be, we may not be the United States of America, you know, the way you think it is now. And I'm all about freedom surviving, and it's just you at least got to keep the definition of the word. That's why it's so important. Guys like Mark Victor and myself and others and these guys, you know, running for office is not something who gives a crap about, you know, running for office. Just an opportunity to get a platform to say, you know, this is what libertarianism means. Because they'll try and take that word, too. They took classical liberal away from you. They took conservative away from you. They took liberal away. They took whatever. They just keep taking it. They redefine it. Capitalism doesn't mean what it used to anymore. I mean, it's just, you know, so we're holding on to this one word. And anarchism is even, you know, autocracy. I rule myself. I mean, whatever word it is, I just call it leave me aloneism. And I'm going, can I be a leave me aloneist? I vote leave me aloneist. So this is what's going to be advocated. And I'm just about the leave me aloneist survive, the voluntarist, whatever you want to call them. That we survive the next wave, you know, this way when it reconstitutes that there is there are people there that even, you know, understand the concept that survive this. Keep breathing in and out. And where do we do that? You know, a lot of the people, they now they're starting to get, the government's bad and they're ready to do something. Well, is it past doing something? It's past just surviving it. It's not how many minds you can save now. It's how many asses you can save. You know, have we got to that point yet? Well, I don't know. You know, these guys got an opinion. You know, what do you think? You know, Alex Ross, you know, what's the next wave?
Expatriation. A lot of people just getting out of here and looking for somewhere else. I don't know if that's a good idea, because I don't know if anywhere else you have the same civil liberties or as great, you know, the Second Amendment and but, freedom of speech even, but
I know, I was just thinking about that, like, oh, I would really miss that, you know, having a sidearm and stuff, but what good has that done you here? Like, everyone's like, oh, you, in those second world, third world countries, they're just, oh, they're dirt poor, and you don't have the, if you're talking like, I don't know, you know, some other friends of mine who are like, oh, they don't have the Second Amendment liberties. I'm like, okay, so this Second Amendment did you so much good? Like, now? Like, when do you get to use it? Like, do you think that they'd give you a right to revolt? No.
Well, by the time, you know, it gets to where you need the Second Amendment, it doesn't matter what the piece of paper says.
Right.
Anyway.
Yeah. So a lot of good it did you up to this point.
Look how active they are in their streets, though. They go crazy because they don't have any guns. It's almost like the Second Amendment handicaps how crazy you can get.
And, right. And
because they can shoot you, but if there is no Second Amendment, you can just go crazy, throw Molotov cocktails,
right,
you know, burn stuff. They go crazy over in other countries.
Well, that's why... Yeah, and the Dollar Vigilante, in one of his pictures he put up in the blog, it was like some Polish protesters were tear gassing the cops with like bare, because they're just like, they don't care, like they're so acclimated to resisting. Here it's like, oh yeah, I'll revolt tomorrow.
An armed society is a polite society,
but
and
here,
almost like that's,
we're out of practice because yeah. we're like oh yeah, I'll be able to revolt someday. And
well,
then
you
get,
you know,
out of practice.
I see it as a benefit, though. I think it's because of that that we are as measured as we are. They go, you know, no, the guys that really would, they go, no, when game on, it's game on. Mm-hmm. And in fact, that were some of the guys at Porkfest. You know, you got Bill Buppert and Boston Tea, kind of the same mind. I wanted to make sure they both got acquainted. I go, look, I already know that. Yeah. I had the same conversation with both of you. You guys need to talk to each other, and they become best as buddies. I knew that would happen. And I'm just going, you know, the mindset that they have is, yeah, sooner or later, in the end, there's going to be, you know, you want to keep breathing in and out, and there's some people don't want you to, unless it's in the service of them, and you don't want to serve them, you got to, you know, like, I want to keep breathing in and out, and I'm going to have to, you know, stop me from breathing in and out, and guess what happens? You know, you have conflict. So they're in that mindset, and I'm trying to avoid that, and because I know what's going to happen. I'm of the mindset, I'm like a William Wallace. I'm like, hey, man, I'll just live in peace if I can. You know, I'm Benjamin Martin and Patriot. I'm just like, no. This war will be fought amongst our homes. Our children will learn of it from their own eyes, not from a history book. And I'm like, you avoid it as much and for as long as you possibly can. You deal with the man, you know, in a cordial way. You make the point, hey, look, I'm going to let you arrest me. We're going to go through this. We'll go deal with it in court. We'll make a big deal out in video. We'll make it, you know, we'll get all out and open, and we'll advocate for them. We'll run for office. We'll play the game as much as we can and do what we want and not compromise and yada, 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 until we get to the point where we've saturated the market and people understand what the issues are. And then when it gets down to the final, put the handcuffs on, get into the FEMA camp, go get your water and food over here. You have to be part of this. You got to pay for that. You got to get help. Oh, and here comes the shot into your flight. They tried that, you know, just a few years ago. They were like, oh no, your body is ours, and you must, by executive order of emergency, blah blah blah, take the needle. And we went all ballistic on that, as they did around the country. Pulled back a little bit on that one. I go, look, if the proper role of government is to defend my individual rights of life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, my body, my property, my whatever, you know, I'm going, well, guess what I claim inside my skin?
Mm-hmm.
I turn my body over to you, you're going to stick a needle in me? I'm like, whoa, seriously, you want to play this game? So there are lines, but, you know, the best thing a lot of times, are we at the point now to where, all right, it's demonstrated. Have we defined it? Have we showed them for what they're? Have we revealed the curtain? Have we exposed the state for what it is? Are we good enough now to where, okay, now we're going to go survive it? We did our bit. Or do we got to, like, prove they're bad more?
No, that's how I kind of feel. Like, I've been doing the activism. We did the banners years ago in Phoenix, and then it kind of... for me, I was attracted to more of the dime cards. It was more of a quiet, you know, message distribution, more, you know, just detached, kind of let it go on its own, like a, you know, leaf in the wind. But even now, I'm just like, I feel like I've reached as many people as I need to reach. I've reached the people who matter, and everyone else, they're not even appealing. I started out with the ethical appeal, then I just started with a logical appeal for freedom, and that doesn't even work on people. And so I kind of feel like I'm kind of done trying to save people. I've pretty much reached as many people as I want to save.
You know, Dr. Paul made that very point. He goes, I've tried the moral argument. I tried the constitutional argument. I'm going to win this economic argument.
Yeah.
And that's what kind of got Alex going.
It's all about the money, yeah. Well, what can I do to preserve my own wealth and make some money for myself and my family? Or what can I do to save what I have?
But what's
scary, most important to me.
What's scary for me is like Stefan Molyneux says, there's no state. It's all just horizontally enforced. They've got people trained that if someone gets out, you know, gets a little freedom, then they, you know, the other slaves pull them back.
And five monkeys.
Yeah, and I was the five monkeys. Yeah, and I was I was at the dog park the other day, and I searched up and down for any kind of laws at the dog park in Scottsdale for smoking. And I had this little short cigar, you know, just more of a leisure thing, and I let my dog go run, and I went to the farthest dark corner of the place, away from everybody, and there was still this lady 20 yards away from me who was taking a picture with her iPhone of me. I'm thinking, what is she doing? So I even then looked afterwards for any kind. There was like, you know, no gum chewing, no alcohol. It said nothing about tobacco. So I was like, oh, I'm good. And it's just, but she's trained to like, oh, no, he must be breaking the law. So I'm going to take it. And I don't know what she's going to do with the picture. Put it in her like.
Put you on dirty Scottsdale.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. The dirty. But that's.
There's such a thing.
But when I see that. When I see that, I'm like, I'm so done. You go to the FEMA camp. I'm not going to save you. I'm not going to tell you about sound money. I'm not going to tell you about getting off the grid. You deserve this because you're enforcing this. This is horizontal slavery.
You know, that's one thing that Stefan, it was kind of, he was the first that I think really started pressing this, is that he's so frustrated with his family members, you know, and his extended family and so on, that he's like, look, I'm done. You know, you quit, you choose your family. I mean, whatever. How much responsibility are you supposed to take for saving them? And Peter Schiff kind of did the same thing years ago. He was saying, look, there's enough information out there. On the, all you got to do is just ask the freaking question, and you have the answers. And I have extended family, you know, same kind of thing. You know, warning them like, you know, just like the guy that the greatest story never told. He was telling the story of the same thing with his family. He's like, look, you know, we came from a wealthy family, owned car dealerships and so on. He's like, I'm warning them. Like, this is coming. This is serious. Tinfoil hat wearing, you know, dumb kind of. At what point and how much evidence do you have to have before you're going, look, you know, I did my bit. This is the last that I'm going to bug you with this. You know, past the Thanksgiving turkey, I'm not causing a ruckus or anything, which I don't. I'm not as bad as some, but, you know, it is coming. We know you're out there. We can feel you now. We know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. We don't know the future. We aren't here to tell you how this is going to end. We're here to tell you how it's going to begin. We're going back to editing the next edition of Freedom's Phoenix Digital Magazine now, where we are telling the people what you don't want them to know. We're showing them a world without you, a world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries, a world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice we leave to you. Subscribe at freedomsphoenixeasy.com. That's freedoms with an S, phoenixeasy.com.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
I don't know. I know which one I am. I just want to be left alone. Leave me alone. Leave me alone. Leave me alone. Now, the thing is that I'm there are stages. I mean, it's been important. I've gone through different stages. I've exhausted different stages. I mean, think about it. You know, the Ron Paul Loveolution thing, I mean, you know, been there, done that? I mean, have we gone through that? Have we done the national, the international? Are we done? You know, is there something else we need to do? You know, we got to go join C4L, and we're going to run for office. You know, I mean, we're going to you know, take over the Republican Party. There's a goal for you. You know, I mean, that's one thing. Let's talk about that. I mean, as this movement has evolved, you know, people have gone different ways. You go to Pork Fest, and by the time we get to Pork Fest, Ron Paul, he wasn't disparaged in any way. Nobody's other than the campaign and their stupid whatever crap's going on. But, you know, people always have a lot of, you know, I remember the book, it was called It Usually Begins with Ayn Rand. And I read that book and it had, you know, an impact on me. I could understand, you know, where a lot of people came from. Well, now it's like they have another book. It usually begins with Ron Paul. I'm waiting, you know, I guarantee there's going to be a book with that title, okay? It usually begins with Ron Paul. It might take 5 years before they do it, but... But I think we're kind of grown past this political thing Well, what stage are we in now? I mean, what are you guys going to be doing with your time?
I think we're basically moved into more like an anarchist, you know, forget the state kind of thing. And, you know, yeah. We don't need them.
Well, there's a term that's been brought up. Might have been Boston Tea Party, might have been Bill Boopert, might have been Doug Casey, called a file, PHYLE. They're, you know, they're just, it was some blog entry remarking on how the nation state is a pretty brief, recent concept on Earth, and we could probably be evolving beyond that when everything settles out, as we're talking about now, when the dust settles, to get into more like decentralized global communities where you don't have to be with them all with your group at all times, but just know where everyone's at.
And compete in the Olympics and not have to have a flag.
Yeah. So just sort of stay off the radar, but be global. You know, your network is global.
It already is. I mean, people are already growing up. That, you know, that's one thing Kokesh said. I thought resonated. He goes, yeah, you know, my generation grew up knowing about computers. We got it. You know, and it's like you guys are probably teenagers in the mid 90s or something like that, and you're going, wow, you know, this is cool. I can do it. But you didn't grow up at 2 years old with your first laptop.
No,
you know,
it's kind of
2 years
cool
old with your tablet and your Xbox and intertwined with the blah, blah, blah. So It's like it's different now. These guys are interconnected with instantaneous, translated blah, blah, blah with their peers across the planet. I don't know where this goes. And I don't think the bad guys know either, but they want to track everything. They want to make sure they know everything. And I think it's going to come down to a physical space. While they're battling over here, having their whatever, I just want to, you know, keep being fed, you know, and live comfortably. And I know what's in the future for Ernie. I guarantee what I want to have in the future. I guarantee one thing. Ernie's going to want electricity, okay? So I'm like, you know what? My life's going to be better with electricity. So we're working on that. You know, the technology is such now that you can be off the grid. Bob's proved that for 8 years. So now it's getting really cheap. So we're just, you know, that's when I get back from this vacation, I'm going to take some, you know, where am I going to put my silver? And I'm like, you know, some of it might go into getting me some battery backup and solar making, doing, getting while I can before it shoots up in the whatever. But the thing is that, you know, Gary had a really good idea. What if we just did the Crosby, you know, Rogers campground kind of thing, and we just find a nice place here in Arizona, and they winter here. Summer up there, winter here. We have a place, and we get cover for a lot of the equipment that we need, the infrastructure you're going to put in. It's campground, as far as you know. And that field over there, we just happen to, you know, it's like a walk-through garden that produces food. I mean, you know, so you have different building techniques, different things. Because I know so many people in the freedom movement, these young people that have sacrificed so much, like Ademo and Pete, they would love to have some place just that you could put forth some effort and actually build something that could be theirs. And that's another thing. It has to be private. If you're going to stay, you get your little corner or whatever, and it's yours. So is America still that way? Can we go to find a small community in a certain county that, at least for expectation of a few years, they just not be coming in with a SWAT team? I mean, can we have that kind of, or do you got to go into a canyon out in the forest somewhere? I mean, what do you got to do? And now we're going up the first weekend in August to the Jackalope Festival. Saturday, Alma and I are driving up there so we can agree on a location. I found a place. She wants to do a place. But I got, you know, she's got a long list of stuff she wants, and we'll make sure we can get that done or not. So we're going to go Saturday and, you know, make a final decision. And the thing is that it's kind of a, you know, bug out shakedown as far as I'm concerned. I go, you need to understand, you know, man, you better make a list. You go, damn, my life would have been a lot better if I brought that $4 whatever. You know, so these are the kind of things, a whole different way of activism that we're doing into the future. And I'm wondering, you guys got jobs, you know, some of you, you know, and you're an engineer. So they want, you know, Ross, you know, an engineer at a power plant. I mean, they want your butt over somewhere in some country, de la whatever. And they'll get you your passport if they want you. So I'm just, there's a lot of options. But what is it that's most important to you? I mean, is it just being left alone as you're a lone man on a mountain somewhere learning the new language? Or do you have people you want to be around? Is it friends? Is it family? Is it, you know, America? I mean, you know, what is it that you're searching for?
Well, you know, this is probably not a new sentiment, but the American spirit is not contained to America. The American spirit's everywhere. You just have to go find it. And if it's not here, it's somewhere else. And there's other countries that are... Honestly, I think my grandpas would agree that are, you know, there's countries that are examples of what this country was when they were setting out
you know,
to make great things. Well, it's not countries. I won't say, like, you know, national boundaries defined in a collective that way, but there's markets out there.
Ethnicities, cultures,
yeah,
areas.
There's pockets. There's pockets of progress. Like, as you know, down in some of these second world, third world countries, like, they're more free than America because they just don't have the infrastructure to come harass you. And so actually living in some of these crackpot dictator countries, what's so great is that, yeah, they're socialist, but they're just so stupid. They can't enforce it. Unfortunately, in America, they can enforce it. They have the infrastructure.
You know, that was a point that Stefan made a really good point about. He goes, the more free you are, the more likely you're going to be oppressed by the prosperity of the people supports even a little bit. You get this enormous government that then is going to kick the crap out of you.
Yeah. It always catches up because it feeds off of the progress.
Well, so it may be the rebirth, you know, freedom's phoenix, the rebirth of liberty, you know, from the, you know, so Alex, you're listening to this and you're like, what mindset are you in?
This Ross guy is crazy. No one should listen to him. No, I think the same way. Yeah, we're, you know, whether we can go overseas or try to create something here, but, you know, I've always been a fan of history and just what you're seeing in the United States right now. It's just scary. We got TSA yelling at people to freeze.
Yeah.
Frisking people. We've got like 5 or 6 wars going on right now. We've got this massive debt that's $15 trillion. It's going to be $60 trillion, I guess, unfunded liabilities. And you're just seeing the American people just completely change. You know, they don't care about stuff anymore. They care about just sports and movies and shows. And Ross was saying, we're losing the concept of America. America is just not America because it's the land that we're on. It's the concept.
You know,
America.
As much as I'm willing to write off politics, we're done. We're good. You guys, you know, up for a couple of days of activism with this Mark Victor thing?
Oh, yeah, Mark Victor. Everybody, if you need an attorney in Arizona, Mark's guy to go to.
Yeah,
he's honest.
You know, you're willing to make a couple of signs, come up with some creative slogan, kind of whatever.
Signs, yeah. Dude, the signs are like popping up like daisies now. It must be the rain. But there's signs everywhere, man. And it's sign season. So maybe just for good old-fashioned good times, do some more signs like we did a couple years ago.
I keep telling everybody, I go, it's September 10th. That's when they're going to certify, and by then you'll know he's on, and they haven't played their games and all that kind of stuff. So anything that we do, we need to, you know, kind of build up the then and get, and then boom, shakalaka. Yeah. And they'll be like, damn it. They're going, damn it.
Yeah. You know? If anybody doesn't know much about Mark Victor, just YouTube him. And, you know, he's got tons of awesome speeches on there. The guy can talk. And, you know, if you just put him up on stage with Democrat and Republican, wow. It'll be awesome.
He's a trial lawyer, not just an attorney, but he's a trial attorney, right?
He loves going to trial.
So it's
we're going to trial.
Yeah. He's great at making the rhetorical arguments.
Oh, everybody wants to, you know, avoid trial. We'll just plead. He goes, yeah, but if I plead that, then I don't get to go to trial.
Yeah.
I don't want to go to trial.
Yeah.
Trial. You know, this is, I can see this is going to, man, they just always, damn it, those freedom-oriented libertarian kind of, damn it. It's just always, damn it. And when we went in, Mike Wasden and I went down, and his friend, and, you know, made sure, because he was busy with court stuff, and we took care of the paperwork for him. And as we're going in, they're all like, yeah, Ernie, we were wondering if we were going to see you this election cycle. You waited to the last minute, didn't you? Yeah, but it's good. What's going to have the biggest impact? Just the people, you know, in this last ditch of just telling people what the truth is. It's not about voting. It's not about any of that stuff. It's just about people knowing the truth and being able to prepare and deal with it. Because and these young people right here, they're doing it because they know they have to. Do you? What are you doing? Well, it's like I don't think we can do it fast enough.